When we get married, when we fall in love, the reason we're happy at the beginning is because we're pouring into each other. We're making deposits. After we get married, we tend to then go after the rest of life and make mostly withdrawals. And we go from building our marriage to using our marriage. Well, no wonder we're unhappy. Every account that has only withdrawals eventually bankrupts.
Hey, I'm Allie, and I believe that an emotionally healthy you is the greatest gift you can give yourself, your family, and the world. This is your weekly investment in your personal development. Join discussions with top experts as we focus on how to achieve your dreams, grow your business, and deepen your faith. As always, we keep it practical with lots of tools and action steps that you can put into motion today. I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. Welcome to the show today. It is Valentine's Day week, and you are in the right place because we are having a best of show. I'm bringing the best tips, advice, and strategies to keep our marriages strong. Today, we're bringing back Kevin Myers and Tony Newhoff and Gary Thomas. I want the best of the best on keeping our marriages strong, how to stay connected, and I want easy, actionable tips so our tomorrow is even better than our today. Now, the best of shows are a little bit longer, so no coaching this week. But I do have recommendations. I have a song and a special recommendation that's a little bit different than our normal ones. So without further ado, here's the love episode. Let's get started with Kevin Myers.
We put interesting titles to them because they're memorable and it's how we get a sense of how to attach it practically. So when we start off in the seven practices, the first one is break the quit cycle. And we talk about what we call ABC zones, meaning that everybody has the A zone that's full of promise. And then every relationship hits the B zone. And the B zone is full of problems. And it's inescapable. And what you always want to do in the B zone is quit. You just want a Q zone on the thing. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn how to build some B zone muscle, you can get to the C zone. Well, that's the first of the seven practices. The second is hands up. And this is just a simply profound awareness that you've engaged in a relationship to love someone that you really hoped they would do a better job at than you. You don't know that's what you were hoping. But what you're really hoping is they take the vows more seriously than you, and they are more selfless than you. And the need for prayer, and that's what hands up. We tap into Exodus chapter 17. The power of acknowledging that you've entered into a relationship that you will need the help of God. And there's a spiritual realm and the power of God that can pour into your life and over your marriage. And you just need to be in a life of prayer to accomplish what only God can accomplish and make possible in a marriage relationship. And that's really how Marcia and I experienced breakthrough after breakthrough and healing and wholeness and renovation. The third is we call fair fight rules. Nobody can escape conflict. It's inevitable. Early on, I thought if I could just win, it didn't matter if Marcia lost. My goal was to win. Well, I thought I was winning most of them, but the marriage was losing. And until you figure out that a fight does not form intimacy unless it's fair, so that you can grow through the conflict. And on the other side of it, be more mature, come together, add strength. There is an art that is, I don't want to over-dramatize it, but it's almost been lost because most people want to be heard. And that will never mature a marriage relationship.
Interesting.
You have to have the ability to hear. And so we walk through 12 rounds of how you do a fair fight. Anyhow, then the next chapter, we call it take a knee or two. And we just acknowledge that you're going to have to figure out who's the boss in the relationship. And our conclusion, Allie, was that she's not the boss. I'm not the boss. Although I'm not sure we've won this entirely, but God's the boss. And here's what it means for God to be the boss in our marriage. And for us to knit in a oneness that is unlike anything else on earth. Marriage is not a humanly designed contract where you simply negotiate a deal. This is a divinely designed, supernatural, physical, sexual, emotional connection of a oneness that was designed to happen so uniquely by God's ordained intent that it would never be undone. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole theological question as to whether or not it ever really is in the way Christ talks about it. So we talk about, how do you take a near to? How do you build into your marriage relationship this oneness that God had already stated is your condition when you say, I do? The next practice, then we do the fifth, which is don't settle for the hollow Easter bunny. Then it's just building solid instead of hollow. And what are the principles and the values that do that? Then practice six, evict the elephant in the room. I think that phrase is familiar to most people. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're sitting in a room and you have an elephant, in fact, we had some fun with this a few years ago in the church. We put those little stick figures. You familiar with those on the back of cars? Everybody has like on their SUV or whatever. And we put a stick figure of a family, and then on the end, we put an elephant. And we just talked about how you tend to make that your family pet. What the elephant really is it represents pretense. Mm-hmm. And when you let pretense sit inside your living room, your family room, your bedroom, your kitchen, your household, your marriage, your family, and you don't address it, and you act like everything is fine, that kind of pretense will undo and destroy your marriage and a family. So we talk about, how do you evict the elephant? You've got to clean up the pretense that is undoing you and undoing your marriage. Choose your bucket wisely. This I learned from a mentor friend of mine, John Maxwell, and I don't even know if he created or stole it or borrowed it. I don't know how it got here, but it's so simply profound for our marriage. So here it is. Everybody, no matter who you are, carries two buckets in life. Mm-hmm. You carry a water bucket and a gas bucket. Wherever you go, whatever you do in every relationship, whether it's work or home or church or community, doesn't matter where you are, but you carry two buckets. And in any given moment of even a mild or slight conflict, you get to pull out the gas bucket or the water bucket, and you pour it on the match. And when you pull out the gas bucket, it's like pouring, obviously, gas on a fire, and it burns things up. Mm-hmm. Or you pull out the water bucket, and it builds things up. It douses the fire. It ends it immediately. It immediately removes the destructive force of fire. When John described that, and I was probably in my early 30s when I heard it, I realized that that's true everywhere in the church. Everybody in the church carries two buckets. Mm-hmm. And you're either adding to harmony or conflict, but you're never neutral. True. Everybody uses one of their buckets. In my marriage, in my family, with my kids, raising children, and I taught them how to use buckets. I bought them buckets. I wrote on one bucket water and the other bucket gas. Right. I give them buckets. I did it once in the life of the church. I bought everybody in the church. That's back when we were smaller. We weren't 15,000 or whatever then. But I bought buckets for everybody when we were a stage we could. And I put water on one and gas on the other. And I said, listen, this, you are contributing to burning up the great things God has for you relationally and for all of us. Or you're building them up. Water gives life. Gas burns it up. So in any moment, in a 2 to 3 second window, you make a decision what bucket you're going to use. I need pictures, Allie. I don't know how you're wired, but I need pictures. I need highly practical, accessible pictures that immediately translate a principle into something I know how to use. And I have those buckets in my head all the time. See, some people ask, how did you ever get past your anger? How do you grow past that? Because if you grow up and then you have a temperament that's along that line, and then you're very competitive and blah, 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 and you got broken, wounded stuff in your soul that God's supposed to be healed, how do you do it? The buckets were huge for me in that, because I realized that in about a 2 to 3 second window, if I keep picking up the gas bucket, I'm going to keep destroying the best things in life. Let me give you a couple of things. The first one is that choice right there is more significant than most people acknowledge. The internal decision to say, what can I do to help renovate my marriage? When you make that internal decision, you are immediately pushing it forward. And that's missing in a lot of marriages. We tend to use marriage rather than build it, because we're trying to build so many other things in our world.
You just dropped a little profound statement in the middle of a bigger statement. Dive into that just real quickly.
When we get married, when we fall in love, the reason we're happy at the beginning, mm-hmm, is because we're pouring into each other. We're making deposits. After we get married, we tend to then go after the rest of life and make mostly withdrawals. And we go from building our marriage to using our marriage. Well, no wonder we're unhappy. every account that has only withdrawals eventually bankrupts. So the decision to say, I'm going to build my marriage. One of the reasons you get a book like this, and one of the reasons we wrote it, is because people need triggers to help them take action on what they wish they had. And they aren't going to come up with all that. So you write a book and you say, okay, let me. So that's the first thing. Just making a decision that I'm going to build my marriage and not use my marriage is huge. Second, this is going to sound way too simple. But before the book comes out, you say, well, what can I do? I know this is going to sound awkward. I know it's going to sound too simple, but I'm still going to say it. If you're listening to this and you're a follower of Christ and you're a person of faith, make a decision, regardless of the awkwardness, to agree. Just say, can tonight, when we go to bed, can I hold your hand for 60 seconds and pray for you? Not 10 minutes, not 60 minutes. Just grab the hand. If you're the husband and you want to initiate, great. Grab your wife's hand and say, listen, honey, we're not having a long conversation. All I want to do is say this. Heavenly Father, thank you for my spouse. We have an imperfect marriage, but she's a wonderful woman. Would you bless her and the things that weigh on her most? Would you lighten? Would you give her wisdom over the kids as she parents? Would you give her strength when she gets weary? Would you help us understand how to build into each other? Would you give her great sleep tonight, Lord? And would you give her your voice and encouragement tomorrow? In Jesus' name, amen. I love you, baby. Good night. You cannot consistently pray over someone you love and consistently despise them. You cannot. You can't be angry. You can't sit in anger. You can't keep having discouraging, unkind thoughts toward them. You can't keep expecting more of them and less of yourself. There are things that the Spirit of God will reverse in you the moment you pray over someone, because you're invoking an invitation of the living God to engage himself in the thing you care most about that he cares about as well. And he will work in you and over them.
I love those super practical tips from Kevin. So good. Okay, now let's move on to my conversation with Tony Newhoff on transforming our marriage.
I think we got to the point where we realized that we had to do something differently or we weren't going to make it. And at that point, I think I reached a deeper level of surrender. I reached the point where I just had to open up to Jesus and say, and take a posture of humility more seriously, where I could say, you know, show me what my role is. Just as David prayed, see if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Different posture of prayer. And I went to a Christian counselor, and we had to make that transition that often people do when they go to counseling, where at the beginning of our marriage counseling, it was almost as if we were trying to sway the counselor to see things my way.
Oh, yeah. I think many people have been there.
To side with me. And we had to change our posture. And I know I had to do this personally, where I would go to counseling with the humble opinion that I really need to see what the counselor has for me. Where is it that I'm blind to my own actions, my own opinions, thoughts, beliefs, because what I have been doing isn't working and I need someone to help me.
So good. You mentioned the red flags that were associated with the conflict that you and Carrie were having. And I think some of those red flags, if you want to share those, many of us will go, oh, I've seen that, or I've been there, or I remember when we used to do that. Do you want to share those?
The red flags I talk about are the ones that John Gottman, the esteemed marriage researcher who's the founder of the Gottman Institute, talks about. He flags them as the warning signs. He calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You know, they're danger signs that if you keep going in this direction, you're probably going to lose your marriage. So they're criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt. When Carrie and I were in our darkest days, we really didn't know these things. We hadn't heard about the red flags. But once we had already started to turn a corner and then became familiar with his writing, we could go, oh, yes, like check, 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 check. We reached the place where we had all the red flags. I'd just like to say, Allie, that if there's anyone listening right now who also is saying, well, yes, I have one or more of those red flags in my marriage right now, it is possible to work through them, to get past them, and to clear them out of your marriage. But it does take humility. It takes a willingness to look inside. And, you know, sometimes looking inside is scary or it feels painful. And yeah, there's some pain to go through. But if you can sit with it and not back away and just move through that pain, there's just something so beautiful on the other side.
No, that's a really, really good encouragement for people. You talk about this concept where you encourage people to fight for we instead of me. And I think even in that encouragement that you gave, even if people have those red flags or one or more of the red flags, this concept of fighting for we instead of me is really powerful. Can you talk about how spouses can practically do that?
It was a big transition for us to make because I think Carrie and I are both trained as lawyers. We met at law school. And that didn't help us. When you get into a space where you're trying to convince your spouse to come over to your side, you can get into that place of just fighting for me, fighting for my opinion. And yet a much healthier approach to marriage is to recognize that what you really want is to elevate your bond, your marriage connection higher than your own individual interests, you know, and that's what I mean by fighting for we. And when you're able to do that, it just leads you into such a beautiful place in your marriage. So Allie, anyone who's listening who recognizes that they have this dynamic going on, this fighting for myself instead of fighting for us together, it's a matter of deciding that you're going to share power. John Gottman talks about the importance of just being able to share power with your spouse. And he showed that there's an 81% chance that a marriage will implode if one of the spouses refuses to share power. And so what this really looks like is that you approach your marriage as if you're a team, you're a partnership, and where you have an issue, a problem that you need to solve, you imagine yourselves being on the same team and contributing to whatever the solution might be. And I think, you know, when we're fighting for me, we often set things up, not intentionally, but subconsciously, we're fighting as if there's two solutions. That it's binary, that there's my position and your position, and we might go head to head, toe to toe on whose position is better. But when we take the we approach, I think it requires us to bring up more of our creativity so that we can brainstorm what are the solutions to this problem? Because chances are there's more than two. There's probably in reality many possible solutions. And so our joint task being on the same team is to go through those solutions and choose the one that both of us can live with. Now, it might not be either person's ideal, but for the sake of valuing the relationship and the bond that we have together, we might make a compromise or step back from what would be your ideal position to something that you can both live with, but just reinforces that satisfying relationship that you have with each other.
There's something else that I wanted to talk about that I feel like is really important. You shared in your story, and you can talk about it a little here too, how when you grew up, your family wasn't emotionally available for you, and how this affected your marriage going into a marriage where your whole life, your childhood, you weren't given the emotional tools to be able to deal with things in a really healthy, mature way. I think for so many people, we do go into adulthood kind of walking wounded in one way or another, but we don't realize that we are. So how can people increase their self-awareness to understand if they have past hurts or past pain, or they are walking wounded in some way, so we don't continue to take these things into our marriage?
Such a wonderful question. The self-awareness part is, it's so key, and it's something that in my 20s, I would say, was not on my radar screen at all. And so that the how of self-awareness you know, I think it's multifaceted. I think it starts with, well, for me, being a Christ follower, it starts with me being open to what Jesus has to say, whether it's in his word, whether it's in prayer, but also being alive and open to the advice of others, you know, really listening to messages, for example, you know, sermon messages, what your pastor has to say, with the idea that I have something to learn from this. And what is it? I think the other thing that's so important with emotional health is just starting to pay attention to what your emotions are trying to tell you. So if you're getting triggered over something, let's say what your spouse said to you, maybe a little bit provoking, but maybe it's a 3 on the scale of 1 to 10. But your emotional reaction is all of a sudden, it's a 10, like you are there in a split second. Well, that trigger, it may be upsetting at the time, but if you can stand back from it and go, huh, that should be telling me something. There's something unhealthy under that reaction. And I'm not saying that from a shaming or blaming perspective, but I'm just saying, can you see it as a clue and then start to follow the rabbit trail? Mm-hmm. Start to try to figure out, okay, what happened there and why? Why am I reacting this way? And I think if you can become a student of your own emotions so that you can gain better control. Because I think at the beginning, you know, Carrie and I worked really desperately hard to try to control each other's emotions, each other's emotional responses. And we had to come to the point where we could realize that the only person's emotions who I can really try to influence or control are my own. I can't control Carrie's emotions. He needs to be responsible for his own. I need to be responsible for my own. And it was quite a journey for us to get there, Allie. And if I had heard these words earlier in my marriage, I would have been grateful.
Those are wise, wise words. Okay, now what about for couples? We've been together a long time, feeling kind of disconnected, feeling kind of lonely. How can couples maybe who are in that situation where there's nothing big wrong, there's no four horsemen of the apocalypse going on, they're just kind of blah, just kind of, you know, going with the flow. What's your advice there?
I love that question because I once did a survey of a group in our church, married couples in our church who I was giving a talk to, and the number one issue that they raised in their marriage was feeling disconnected. And so, you know, whether there's conflict involved or whether it's just, you know, you feel like you're living parallel existences or you're living like roommates or you've drifted apart, you can feel that, get that question, where has the love gone in our marriage? Sometimes when people reach that place, they tend to panic. But I'd like to encourage anyone who does resonate with this feeling of being disconnected to not panic. You don't need to panic. There are things that you can do to help rebuild that bond and bring you closer together. I'll just mention them quickly. One of them is to become a student of your spouse's emotions, like, and how you respond to them. And just sort of continuing the conversation of what I said before about emotions, just sit with your spouse's emotions and validate them and accept them for what they are, so that by doing that, the research shows that you will actually feel closer to each other if you create that emotional safety in your relationship where your spouse can vent and that's okay. And you can say, oh, wow, I would have found that frustrating too. If I'd been in your shoes, I would feel that way.
Can I just jump in and say that takes so much emotional maturity? Everyone should get a blue ribbon for being able to do that in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're dealing with triggers, that's another thing. If your spouse is triggered, then, you know, that's something different. But even just in being able to vent and respond to each other and, yeah, that just being able to not have that impulse to control your spouse's emotions, but just let them be what they are. Take some practice, you know, take some falling down and getting up and dusting yourself back off, but something to practice because it's so valuable. You will actually feel closer to each other if you can create emotional safety in your relationship because you need it to be attached to each other. A couple other things. paying attention to how much positive versus negative communication there is between the two of you. So the research shows that for successful couples, that ratio of positive to negative is about 5 to 1. And so I'm not saying that you need to like give your spouse 5 compliments a day and check them off the list. But what I am suggesting is that if you can mix positive compliments, saying something that builds your spouse up with gentle touch, with signs of affection, with a body language, that those positive communications, 5 of them for every 1 of a complaint or airing something that's bothering you, that you'll tend to have a better climate of fondness and respect and admiration, like just more positive feelings in your marriage together. It will help draw you closer.
Yeah. I mean, that's great advice for marriage and great advice for positive to negative interactions with kids too. Just being aware of what your ratios are. That's really
absolutely
powerful.
Yeah. And then the other thing I'd like to say about becoming closer is share experiences together. Like, I think one really helpful concept of intimacy is shared experiences. So the research shows that if you share even novel or exciting experiences together, it will help draw you closer. It actually helps you feel more satisfied and more passionate about your relationship if you don't get into a rut and always do the same things together, but sometimes try something new. There's this one study that had people try something that was novel or exciting to each of them for 90 minutes a week for 4 weeks in a row. And they compared how they felt about their relationship together before and after. And the research showed that people felt closer to each other and more excited in their relationship after they did that. And these shared experiences don't have to be adrenaline producing. They don't have to be expensive. It can just be something that you're both interested in that stretches you a little bit. That just is, there's an aspect of novelty to it. So those are ways that couples can move from that place of feeling like they're disconnected to just feeling much more satisfied and getting that feeling that your partner has your back and that you're in love. I really do believe that in God's design, that marriage relationship, you know, that oneness, the being one flesh together, is so much his design. It's so freeing and beautiful when it works itself out the way God intends. And he really does intend for the marriage to be the priority. Like in your home, I know that as a parent, you know, we're so dependent on our kids, really rely on us for everything. And so it's so easy for our kids to become a focus over our spouse. But one of the best ways that you can give security to your kids and, you know, give them that solid, loving foundation is to love your spouse really well and to make your marriage a priority. So that, you know, sometimes people, I think, get the idea that investing in my marriage or spending time with my spouse without my kids is somehow selfish or that we're taking something away from our kids. But I want to say that you're really not. You are giving your child this beautiful gift if you can give them just this example of two people loving each other and living in this submission to each other, you know, where you say you first, no, you first, no, you first.
That's really great advice. It's the better we are to our spouse and the stronger our marriage, the better it is for our kids. Absolutely.
So good, right? Now, last but never least, we have Gary Thomas on Strengthening Marriage.
Deborah and John, it's a couple where their marriage was really close. They got along really well. And then the first child kind of blew things up. And she was caught off guard because she also dealt with some depression, postpartum depression, and she didn't anticipate and whatnot. But I quote Les Parrott, who said, when a baby is born, a new marriage is born. Mm. And when the second baby is born, a new marriage is born. And they talk about, again, how do they stay connected? And they set some boundaries that kind of shock some of their friends. For one, the bedroom is our private space. It's not the kids' space. They're not going to sleep with us. They would put them down at a certain time. They had Sunday night, they called connect nights, where they would get together and they would debrief and whatnot. And then they became so concerned to do it, Jonathan actually decided to start working 3 days a week. Now, Deborah works too, and she brings in some income, and he's an eye surgeon, so he can make some more. But they still, it's not easy to get by on that. They still, I've seen their car, they drive an older car and whatnot. But what Jonathan said, and this is really what I want the listeners to hear. He goes, yeah, we've taken some financial hits, and our kids aren't doing a lot of activities and whatnot. He goes, but if you have a connected marriage, you don't care how much money is in the bank. You don't care what kind of car you drive. Would you rather drive a brand new Mercedes when you're so angry at each other you can't even speak? Would you rather drive a 10-year-old minivan when you look over and it's just the delight of your life? The woman you cherish is sitting next to you. And it's just really about reevaluating those priorities, because I do think an emotionally connected marriage makes the difficulties easier to bear and the fun times that much more delicious to enjoy. On the other hand, even if you have extreme wealth and a big house, if you're emotionally disconnected, you're going to be miserable if you're in that place in your marriage. I leaned a lot on Doctors Hart and Dr. May. Sharon May is actually Doctors Hart's daughter. They're both PhDs. And they talk about when you get in these situations, it's important to resent the situation rather than each other. So often you're just frustrated. I wish there was more money. I wish you didn't have to work so long. I wish you didn't have to face this health crisis. I wish. And it's easy to start to resent each other. And I think it's very helpful, because if you want to maintain emotional connection, the last thing you want to do is feel jaded toward each other. So you have to resent the situation and even share about, boy, this really stinks. Not you. If I wouldn't want to go through this with anybody but you, but the situation is really hard. Secondly, withdrawal is the worst choice possible. Now, some people need to process alone, and that's not necessarily withdrawal, as long as it doesn't become constant or the norm. I mean, if you're an introvert, you might need to go away. You go for a run, you go for a drive, you go for a walk, you get a cup of coffee by the fire, something, but then you come back to your spouse. But withdrawal, what I saw so often is that it happens slowly by degrees. It was like me when I moved from Seattle to Houston, and it was harder to run. And in Seattle, I was never really tempted by the sushi and the seafood. That's not a big thing. Then I go to Houston, where they have steak and Tex-Mex and barbecue that just a pathetic weakling in the face of. And I wasn't gaining, you know, a ton, but maybe half a pound a month. But then in a year, it shows up. In 2 years, it shows up. And all of a sudden, you're there for 5 years. And you're like, what happened? And that's the same thing with marriage, where you really have to watch that withdrawal. I think third, it's so key. Intimacy is dependent on security. You can't be intimate with somebody that you don't feel secure with. Is it safe for them to share their frustrations with you? Can you respond in an emotionally healthy way? Can you hear them say their disappointments in you in a way without alienating them or blowing them off or getting defensive? It is so key that you have emotional responsiveness. And then another huge one in all of this is trust. Basically, if they say they're going to be there, are they there? If they're going to pick something up, are they picking it up? It's just, for intimacy to grow, you have to have a sense, why would I invest in this if I don't even know I can count on you? Which is why betrayal is so explosive in a marriage, because when you lose that sense of security and when you lose that sense of trust, you really have to start all over to build the marriage.
These are so fun, right? I love the idea of these best of the best shows. I want to start sprinkling them in throughout the year. We're working on a special show for spring, all about life hacks, things that are going to make our life easier. You know, just the best of little tips that have been shared through the years. The show in May is going to be 5 years old, which is bananas to think I've been doing this show every week for 5 years. And there's so much great content, so many little nuggets hidden away we really want to do our best to keep bringing up the best of the best. Now, I work really hard to make sure anybody who comes on the show with us is going to be really good, and they are the best of the best. But just highlighting even those kind of top tier light bulb moments from an interview and putting them all together so you know these best of shows are just going to be amazing. So I'm having fun. If you have ideas for other thematic best of shows, send them my way. Send me a DM on Instagram. You can always email them to me at friends@allieworthington.com because I'm making this show for you. Okay, let's move on to recommendations. No movie or TV because we're kind of in the doldrums of this year. Now, soon, Ant-Man Quantumania will release, and I am so happy about it. But I record this intro for you 2 weeks ahead. So I'm just going to have to check back in 2 weeks and I'll tell you what I think. Do I think I'm going to love it? Yeah, I think I'm totally going to love it. And you know I'm going to be there opening night. Now, song this week, I've recommended this one before, but I love it so much. I'll tell you why it got brought back up to mind. I saw a tweet from Beth Moore and she was talking about, I think it was a Sunday morning before church, and she was talking about going around and listening to this song, worshiping outside. And I was like, I need to listen to that song. And you know how sometimes the Lord will just bring the right worship song to you at the right time, and it's exactly what you wanted to hear? It's Firm Foundation from Maverick City Music and Cody Carnes. I love that song so much. I love it so much that sometimes I'll be working in my office and I'll just put it on repeat because I don't want to put on different songs and be distracted and then get lost in the music. So I'll often put on a song on repeat. So I'm getting that in my soul, but it's not distracting me enough to get away from work. You know what I'm talking about? That's my song. It is the perfect song right now. I also love about this song, there's the line, I'm standing strong on you. Any song that wants to put my book title in it, please go ahead. I feel like Firm Foundation is amazing, but it's also the standing strong song. So it's the unofficial song of that book. And I love it so much. Now, recommendation. This is different than a normal thing. I took my team at Allison Worthington Media on a team retreat to Orlando a couple of weeks ago. We had the best time. And what it made me think about is that as women, we tend to not prioritize ourselves enough, especially not our friendships. So for us, we spent a weekend investing in ourselves. We spent a day kind of working on some of the same things that I do with my clients, reevaluating the last year, kind of dreaming big for the next year, making a plan for how we can meet our goals individually. And as a team, we dreamed about big things that we're bringing you this year. And we spent a day at Universal just having fun. I managed to beat my personal record of 8 roller coaster rides in one day. The weekend I love to go to Universal is a certain weekend in January every year because there's a Christian music festival there. So like I could go ride roller coasters and then the team that wanted to go to the Matthew West concert or the Dante Bow or Rent Collective concert, they got to do that. So there's something for everyone. But it just made me think about how important it is for women to get away with their friends, away from families, away from responsibilities and have a good time. You don't have to go to Universal. It doesn't have to be a work trip. I like to mix work and fun together, obviously. But your family's going to be okay if you take a couple days away just to be you. Your family's probably going to be in better shape when you get back because you're going to be relaxed and you're going to be happy. Moms just need a break. Now, like I said, it doesn't have to be Orlando. Don't need to have roller coasters. But I want to encourage you to spend time with a best friend or a group of women and get away once a year, depending on your time and what your budget allows. It's a great investment in you, and it's an investment in deepening your relationships that are safe and that are fun, and that pays off so many times over. So my challenge to you, get away with a girlfriend, get away with a group of girlfriends, Bible study friends, your sister, your cousin, whatever it is, but whatever is fun for you, see if you can make that trip, make that investment in you. Okay, now it's time for a review. This one is from Rebuilder Jay. She said, this is my go-to podcast when I want to learn and be encouraged. Thank you. Allie is consistently positive yet real. She's not afraid to take on tough topics regarding faith and women. Her authenticity has been an anchor for me as I struggle through a messy in-between on my faith journey. Thank you. I mean, I can't imagine anything nicer to hear. Like I said, we're coming up on 5 years, and I didn't really know what I was getting into with the podcast. And just the idea that you're there and you're listening and you trust me enough to know that every week I'm going to bring you something good, that I'm not going to waste your time, and that this is a safe place when things feel good, but this is a safe place when things feel bad. We can be messy here. We can deal with disappointment in relationships. We can deal sometimes with disappointment in God and wrestle through these things. We can deal with the aftermath of having tough times. This is a place where when you're having a great day, it's safe and I'm going to celebrate you. And when you're having a bad day, I want to be here to give you a hug and tell you it's okay. It's okay to feel how you feel. It stinks what you've been through, and I'm right here for you. So here's to the first 5 years and the next 5 years. I'm excited about it. So as always, I'm so glad that you're here. I love that we have this time together every week to invest in ourselves, because an investment in you, in your spiritual health, your mental health, your emotional health, and professional success benefits everyone around you. It's why I would talk to you today about taking a break and getting away. I know that God has created you to do great things in this world, things that only you can do. That's why you're here every week, learning something that's going to make you a little bit healthier, that's going to help you live the life that God's calling you to and improve life just little by little every day. So keep stepping up, keep showing up and loving well, because you cannot break a woman who gets her strength from God. I love getting to coach and equip you every week. I'll be back with you next Monday, and I hope you have a great day.